Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply. Nintendo!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of February 16th, 2017. I'm Jose Otero. This is IGN's Nintendo Show. And coming up on Nintendo Voice Chat, we have a two-topic show this week, but I promise you, you will like what we're doing on this episode. First, we're going to talk about the Zelda Expansion Pass and how we feel about it. And then, in the second segment, we're going to have an interview with Bill Trinan, who's here to talk about Zelda Breath of the Wild and 1-2 Switch. But let's lead off with talking about the Zelda Season Pass. And here to talk about it with me is Brian Altano.
Hey.
Fran Mirabella.
Hey, everyone.
And Per Schneider.
Brap, brap.
So to round up and present how this was rolled out, Nintendo announced this week that there is this available for pre-purchase expansion pass, that you'll get three new treasure chests that will appear on the Great Plateau the minute you buy this thing. One of those chests, they said, contains a Switch logo shirt that Link can wear during the adventure. Very random. And then the promise of two other deliveries. The first content pack, which would come out this summer, will include the addition of a Cave of Trials challenge, a new hard mode and a new feature for the endgame map. And then the second expansion pack will launch holiday 2017, adds new challenges that will let players enjoy a new dungeon, a new original story. And yeah, the new challenge was part of that. One thing to point out before we move on is that you can buy this for Switch or Wii U, but you have to buy the pass to get both. They are not sold individually.
And you can purchase that now?
You can. When this was announced, it wasn't up for pre-order, but now you can actually get it on Amazon. Obviously, you can't buy it on a Switch till you get a Switch.
Right.
If you were trying to go through that delivery system.
Yeah, originally I saw it said it was available on March 3rd. I guess they meant that it's active, but so you can
buy it from the shop.
And how much is it again?
$20. Thanks for catching that. $20, and this is what you're getting. So we've seen Nintendo present, you know, DLC in this manner with Mario Kart. We had like, hey, they spelled out we're doing these tracks, we're doing carts, we're doing pieces, things like that. But this one is a lot more vague, I feel.
Yeah, did they announce a Mario Kart DLC at the very start?
No, they waited until after the game came out. That's a great point.
Right, and so the difference here, and what explains some of the reaction, is that I think some fans thought like Nintendo was the last bastion of a game developer that doesn't say thank you for your money and we want more money next week, right? And to be clear, that's not what's happening here. It's not like they have this feature developed that they're holding for a week and then you have to pay extra for it. I mean, they definitely have more of a rollout plan like they have with Mario Kart, but because it's a single player game, I think they tell you right away, it's like, don't get rid of your game once you finish the single player.
One of all the companies too that charge for season passes, I feel like they've been upfront to folks saying that, or an understanding and letting people know that, look, we're not cutting things from the main game. But that's hard on some folks when you're saying a new hard mode. Because does that mean there is no hard mode in the Zelda Breath of the Wild that you're buying at launch?
I think that was a stinger for some people, because that's we've gotten stuff like that and the Cave of Trials, those type of modes, it pre-baked into Zelda games in the past. They're there when you buy the standard issued version of the game. I think that obviously DLC is just like it's a gross term to a lot of people. Season passes are gross terms to a lot of people, but they're not inherently bad things.
Well, vocal people, maybe not a lot of people. Yeah. Like that's the difference, right?
I mean, I think the Paris point and what we all continue to suffer through, it's like, it's hard to attach value and understanding. Yeah. I think that is the issue. Cause like, honestly, when I heard it, I thought, oh, cool. DLC, my expectation
for Zelda, which is unique, right?
Yeah,
so here's what I thought I was going to look at. Oh, cool! There's like a new temple, and there's a blah 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 that's going to be coming out, and then it was like costumes and a hard mode thing, harder mode.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not saying that it's not worth the $20. We'd have to see it, but I wasn't what I expected.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's because first of all, let's address the elephant in the room: is the T-shirt is dumb.
Yeah,
like it's
that you can wear in game. You don't actually get a real one.
It's a T-shirt that breaks that fourth wall. That like you're not getting an amazing outfit like the golden armor or something. You're literally getting a promotional T-shirt.
So I think the Nintendo Switch. Hear me out here, but I think the Nintendo Switch logo is like it's obtuse and weird enough that it could fit in the Zelda universe as like a tunic with a cool design on it.
Yeah.
But if he just shows up with like Nintendo Switch available in stores March 3rd, then that's kind of weird.
Yeah, you
like
know,
a
he's
contemporary.
Going. He's
I hope, no,
slogan.
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be like the Mercedes or whatever. That showed up in Mario
Kart. I don't mind the playfulness, actually. I think it's more about what Paris' point was, which is you would, for $20 additional, which is almost half the price of the game, you would expect an amazing armor set. So I do think that's... are there more details to come?
Incredibly vague details, and we'll probably get an answer when Bill's on the mic later, but it may point to the reality that this is in development. I mean, that was the story when Mario Kart 8 announced DLC. I remember that they were not very specific on what tracks were getting remade, just that we're going to have additional cups, and there'll be 8 additional courses with each pack.
Yeah.
But I still feel like you had a more tangible sense of what those things were.
There's a lot of people who are upset about it, even though in retrospect, the Mario Kart 8 DLC is some of the best DLC we've ever seen
really
in video games. It significantly expanded the depth and content of that game.
Oh, and on this show, we have said, like, if Nintendo goes ahead and says, all right, we're making Zelda Breath of the Wild the biggest map we've ever done with this very open sort of idea of discovery and finding things, and it was a one and done.
Yeah.
Like how disappointing would that have been? And this is already a game that you're going to play for so many hours. So I feel like knowing that there's more coming to it is a good thing.
So I'll do the old guy thing again where I say there's precedence
really
for this,
good,
right?
Yeah.
There is precedence for this. It was called the Ocarina of Time. And Nintendo, before the game was out, said there will be a 64DD add-on disc that will remix the game and you will be able to play it again in a master quest, a harder quest, where everything's changed. So what we don't know about this DLC, is what this harder mode is or what this map feature is, or is the t-shirt used for anything else, right? Like, it could become this thing that you put on when you're doing speedruns, and right. It becomes this thing in a lot of videos where Link with his new t-shirt is doing speedruns. The map feature could point to something that's a scavenger on, something you have to find in the game, or, you know, some other way of exploring something that you didn't know there, that was in the game before. And then the hard mode could be more significant than just taking more damage from an enemy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a hard mode, that's the kind of thing where I would feel bad. Like, it doesn't feel like it's that hard for the developer to implement at launch. And if that was just delayed to be value for
right.
DLC, I would feel bad about that. But mm-hmm. if this hard mode is something more significant like Master Quest, that would be
you could also make yeah. the argument, though, that this game, and especially in the way this world is designed, is kind of hard enough as it is. I mean, we've seen enemies in this world where they take a swipe at you and 8 hearts go missing.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and we're talking about, like, it's hard to really gauge what this all means, and I agree with you. If there isn't a hard mode, like it's difficult to make a determination on value. And I think, and I wrote about this week in an op-ed, but it's strange to me, and it didn't occur to me until this DLC, and I do think we're going to see a lot more DLC from Nintendo on Switch. I think that this has been a trajectory they have been going for a while.
Right.
I think that on their financials, they have noticed that the games with DLC have been doing better, especially on a download, like, sort of sales perspective. But I do see... God, I lost my point where we were building.
Yeah,
I always start building this temple and then I get
You've
lost in the middle of it.
You've got such grand plans, Jose.
Think about it. But like I get excited if I think about what these things could mean. Like what a hard mode could also mean, that every enemy was like this wimpy bokoblin before that you meet right off the bat actually wears armor or something. Like significantly changed about your experience.
So I got my point. My point is that developers have been making and selling DLC for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet there is still not a standard of expectation for what DLC is after a game comes out.
Yeah.
I feel like you have different versions of this, and the ones that were reacted to negatively dominate the conversation so much that the ones that do well are forgotten or ignored, or just in the moment, no one's thinking about, well, it could also be that. Like, why not play both sides instead of just making one?
Yeah,
and I was just going to do the same thing that Pear was just doing. Like, there's the other side of the story, which is actually, right, this is probably the biggest Zelda game yet. They've put a ton of time into it, as we understand. From the looks of it, it looks amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you could argue they've already added so much to the game already. Yeah. Meaning, how do you put a $60 price tag on something? That's already hard enough. And so, meaning, we don't know what's coming. But I would also add that Nintendo doesn't have some big history of, like, oh, it's just going to cost you $20 for some costumes.
Right.
There are plenty of people who do that. So Nintendo, mm-hmm. to be fair, right, they don't normally do that. And I think that's what Pear's getting at. They do really value the customer's time and money. Now, we hope they're not going down some new road, right? And
I think they are, but I do think that it will be I'm hoping that it will be along the lines of still taking into account what is valuable to the consumer and what makes sense. What can we make after the game is done, not what are we cutting before the game is out,
which is
a constant struggle.
It is designed for people who have finished the game. It's like, you finished the game, you walked away, the story is over.
It's not for Marty.
We're going to do this thing to the game that's going to get you back in. And that's what excites me. Like, it could be a significant new experience.
So here's my issue with all of this, and I'm excited for it. I'm going to buy it.
There are going to be cars in it.
Oh, no, I have a better solution.
And airplanes.
Good. The timing of it is odd, and I'll tell you why. I've already spent $130 on this game. I bought the Master Edition, and there was no talk of DLC.
I thought Andrew bought the Master Edition, and you're just buying his sword.
No. I'm buying it off of him. He got the pre-order. I got the special edition. Either way, we're lost in the grass.
Okay,
you're in the tall grass. You need a sword to get out.
Got it.
Special edition's $100. The Master Edition's $130. That's all well and good. I had no problem buying that because it comes with a bunch of cool stuff. But the timing of announcing the expansion pack DLC season pass type thing as $20 afterwards is a little odd, because now I'm baking that into the cost of the other things. Right. And it would just been nice to have all of that grouped in at the same time.
But then they would have had to announce it sooner. And I do think that this was a thing they should have just waited for after the game was out.
I agree.
Versus saying it right now.
Wait, would you have paid for the Ultra Master Edition?
Yes, of course.
The $150 or whatever.
Of course, and I'll still buy those things piecemeal. Yeah. But
you would have liked to know at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's odd that, like, the Master Edition doesn't necessarily net you all of the content then as well, you know?
Maybe they hadn't decided it's on the possible. Timing, this, or maybe they were worried about announcing
retailers
it.
Because don't need that stuff for
I think
right?
it's that. Yeah. I think they maybe were a little concerned. Like, you don't want that to interfere with the Switch messaging and just the game.
Yeah.
Now they're close enough and the pre-orders are in.
Let's not forget they just came up for air after completing this massive game and the hardware, and they probably said, all right, we're going to send this team off now to work on add-on content, and then like, oh, let's announce it.
And there's just like a lot of toxicity and negativity about that in general. But I don't think it's entirely warranted all the time, because games statistically are cheaper than they've almost ever been. I mean, I was buying N64 games for $90.
Yeah, but retail games aren't, and I think that's still the sticking point for folks, right? That everything still has a set price, and everything costs $60, even though some games could get away with, we can charge $80 technically, thinking how many hours you invest in it.
Yeah.
I mean, Fran and I play a ton of Destiny. Yeah. If you added the cost value to play ratio, it was a steal.
If I'm paying per hour, exactly.
Yeah, no, well, even it's kind of. But there is no math equation.
Yeah,
to
and it shouldn't be that way.
But to your point, sorry, you were going to say.
No, I mean, I bought the Battlefront season pass 2 years ago, right? Year and a half ago. And that gave me a content drop pretty much five times, I believe it was, every quarter, plus some extra free stuff. Mm-hmm. And I ended up putting like 150 hours into that game, and I spent $150 on it. And a dollar an hour is nothing to, have fun with a video game. So I think with something like this, I'm going to spend probably 60, 70, 80, maybe 100 hours playing Zelda Breath of the Wild. And if this expands that even further, I'm okay with it. I do agree the messaging is a little strange in terms of like the Switch t-shirt and other things, but I have faith in it.
There's there's another example of this happening in the games industry where the developers of The Witcher 3 announced DLC. Before the game came out, they talked a lot about, all this free download stuff that you're getting. And
that's right.
By the way, you got a lot of free content for The Witcher 3, and it was good.
The entire item system in that game.
It got updated exactly. Yeah. The menus were overhauled. Mm-hmm. And then they announced the free, paid DLC. And there were definitely a lot of people who freaked out and said, hey, you promised us free stuff. Now you're charging for stuff. This is ridiculous. And there were a lot of angry voices until people played the DLC.
Yeah.
Because the DLC was great, right?
Yeah,
like Blood and Wine, for example, the just really cool stories that expanded the universe. And you could have played The Witcher and gotten over 100 hours of playtime easily, but then you could have spent a couple more bucks, kept the game, and played more. And I'm hoping that we're ending up in this direction, but you just can't tell from the announcement.
But why do people latch so hard?
And the t-shirt didn't help.
Why do people latch so hard onto the sort of the poorer examples of execution? Like, why does everyone have to suffer by just because there were the few that messed up? That's the thing that I don't understand.
Because it costs money.
Asking for more money is the problem. Like, that's the point. They already made the game for you, but they're like, there are some extras, but you're going to have to pay for them. It's like, right, when you're trying to buy a car or whatever, the add-ons, and they always feel a little dirty. It's like, why doesn't air conditioning come with it?
Yeah.
Why don't I just get, seriously, a t-shirt? Yeah. That's a great example. Yeah, like, that shouldn't be a selling
point. Book a flight, buy a concert ticket, get an iPhone. Literally everything you do nickel and dimes you all the way to the finish line. So I think people are just hesitant. They're like, but games should have been that one thing I spent $60 on and I have everything in there.
Done.
And it's like, well, not necessarily.
It's whatever the status quo is, when you change it, people will be upset. And, DLC is still something that's fairly new. In mobile games, I mean, look how many people were upset over Mario Run, for example, right? Which was more of a traditional price model of a handheld game at $10, right?
Yeah, and on the flip side, people were upset that you could unlock everything for $10 and the Nintendo wasn't making enough money. Like, investors were pissed off. They're like, this should have been $1.99 a level.
People get upset, the investors, let it go. The investor doesn't care about you. The investor wants to get paid.
They didn't care about the money.
Stop. No.
But that's, don't feel bad for businesses, except for ours. Subscribe, share, thumbs up, all that.
Yep.
But it's like, anytime money is involved, people are going to have reactions to it. And I think that's fine. And like, if a product is shallow and you paid for something that ultimately didn't deliver, like, you want to share that. It's harder to do, though, because when we experience a product, somebody may play for a week, somebody for 2 weeks, 3 months, and there's not this kind of shared experience where you can all talk about it. And so that's where, when news breaks like something like that, everybody can talk about it at the same time. And so you're going to get a lot of those opinions all bundled together.
Sure.
It's I wouldn't react too strongly about some people being negative about it. They may not be the people who are actually buying this game as well. They may just be voicing their concern over DLC in general.
No, and I've also seen plenty of positives. I've seen folks, like, I feel like it was right down the middle. You had folks who were definitely opposed and will always be opposed to what DLC is. And then you had folks on the other side going, wait, there's more to Zelda? Yeah, and I feel like that's our reaction at this table.
Few people say, I want to pay more money. Like, few people will say that, right?
But... Yeah, I was going to say that is this. That's the silver lining. Is you want to look at this as if this is successful for Nintendo, more DLC is a good thing if they're actively developing, meaning really bonus add-on content. Like imagine they support Breath of the Wild for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. That's a world I want to live in when I only get a Zelda game every 4 or 5 years. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the silver lining. I don't know.
But I do think that this does reach a point where, okay, then with Splatoon 2 specifically, that is a game where the first Splatoon really did have a ton of free stuff, and you've kind of set this precedent of, to an extent, that this game grew and evolved over time because you supported it with free maps, you supported it with free weapons, and I think eventually Splatoon did charge you for something. They did find a way to charge something after they finished all the free content, but I think with Splatoon 2, like, I just wonder how they're going to handle that, because DLC is going to be a part of that game. Like, there's no way that
that's why I think it's a little odd that Zelda fans are pissed off at Nintendo for the season pass, but then something like Mario Kart 8 Plus, which literally just adds battle mode and a couple of other things, people are like, bring it on, I can't wait.
I don't know.
That's $60 for a game that we all bought. I bought DLC for.
Yeah, but I think you're underestimating that battle mode. Like, I bet you are going to be smitten with that battle mode.
It also should have been there day one.
Yeah, but that game shipped and is gone, and it got its regular racing DLC like courses. I think I mark my words, Brian Altano, unless you go completely rogue on me because I'm saying this, I bet you when that game comes out, you will be excited about
it. Of course, I'm not going to deny that right now.
Tweeting about it on an airplane.
I bought Wi-Fi just to do that.
Yeah, you're saying there's not comparatively there's not as much anger over
going to see a ton of Wii U games upported to Switch, and there's going to be very little sort of murmur about that being a bad thing. But when somebody adds a $20 value to $60 game,
hang on. When The Last of Us comes out 6 months after the fact on PS4, after 6 months into PS4's launch, The Last of Us came out, I didn't hear anyone bat an eye. The example that was used, in fact, was, well, a bunch of people bought PS4s, didn't buy The Last of Us. Isn't that the same thing?
I think there was definitely a very loud group of people saying, like, why don't I get this for free? Especially because Sony specifically has a precedent of, on PS4 on day one, I had a bunch of games that I could download that I bought on PS3.
No, that's true.
I mean, those saves get carried. I mean, those downloads get carried.
But with these remasters, which have happened on other platforms, there is sort of the expectation that, well, if you've already played this game and already had it, you don't buy. This isn't really for you.
Yeah.
This is for someone else who didn't own that thing, and that's going to be the case with Switch if this thing takes off.
Yeah.
8 million install or whatever. 8 million sold. 8 million copies of Mario Kart 8 sold as of last financial. Which is a crazy attach rate when you think about like 13, 14 million Wii U's in the world. But if the Nintendo Switch has this bigger audience play and it works, there's going to be a lot of new customers who Mario Kart is a great
and very specifically with The Last of Us, 70% of PS4 owners hadn't played that game.
That was the number. I remember.
It was a big number. And I think that like if Nintendo can get that level of bringing in people who are lapsed Nintendo fans, new Nintendo fans, that's huge, and that's something they want to go for. But for someone like me who bought all those games 2 years ago, I'm sitting there and I will buy them again, as I've said many times.
I wonder if they'll put DLC to Mario Kart as well. Like I just wonder if someone,
more tracks packs
possible.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, back to Splatoon. I actually think Splatoon's DLC is going to be free, and I think that's how they upsell you on the somewhat bitter pill that you have to pay for online, right? They need Mario Kart and Splatoon to drive their online plan and sign people up. And also, Splatoon 2 comes out pretty close to Splatoon 1. Like, I don't think they had enough time yet to build all these levels. Mm. I do think that they want to buy themselves a little bit more time to give you more value for the base price over time. So I think they'll replicate the first Splatoon roll out.
Yeah, and I wanted to segue from what you were getting at earlier, which is, can we at least all agree, though, the way they announced
Never.
It might be the problem, which is, the first thing I did when I saw the trailer was said, I was like, please Nintendo, never have a trailer without footage in it again. That was absurd to me. Like, I saw the headline on IGN, I watched it, and it's like, ah, hello everybody, we're announcing some new details, and it was like, where's the
well, because but isn't that good? That means they haven't made it yet.
No, but it's worse.
They're not holding it back.
They're telling you to what we were discussing earlier. It's $20 for a new hard mode. What does that mean? We wouldn't have a show today. We couldn't speculate without that mystery, but it is a big problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they said every temple's going to get turned upside down, I'd be like, boom, I'm in for $20, you know, Majora's Mask. But you get the point. It could be amazing, but because we don't know, we're all pissed and we do know and see something. Come on.
And companies like Rocksteady and Bethesda have gotten in hot water in the past for doing the same thing. Yeah. They sell a season pass. They incentivize you to be there Fallout. Day one, but you don't necessarily know what you're actually buying into.
Fallout
Bethesda specifically.
Batman did that too.
Bethesda had a discount for pre-purchasing the season pass before you even actually knew what was in it, before you saw a single screenshot. And I think for this, I mean, luckily, like, if you're going to put faith in a developer, Bethesda's a pretty good one to back. Rocksteady has a good track record. Nintendo especially.
Just wait, though. You can buy it when it's out.
Well, that's seriously. Yeah, but then you go to the treasure chest on day one.
Nintendo doesn't need a Kickstarter, though. Like, seriously.
No.
Wait, you have to... Wait, you get a bonus for ordering it early?
Yeah, day one.
You have four treasure chests
day
on the
one.
Great Plateau.
This is exactly
so on
what
March 3rd,
three, yeah. three,
no, 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 no. Yeah, so what I need to understand, because this is going to be real talk here. Mm-hmm. March 3rd, do we expect to know more about what we're getting?
You expect to open three treasure chests in Legend of Zelda.
So they're incentivizing you to fund and or buy something without telling you more.
Yes.
That's stupid. That's legitimately a little unethical, in my opinion. Like, and they're not the only ones to do it. But, like... You're baiting gamers who love your franchise to buy something, and you're like, but I can't tell you what it is yet.
You have a vague set of details. That's not the same thing.
What's a new hard mode?
What? You have a vague set of details. Yeah. That's not the same thing.
Not the same thing as what?
We're doing two season packs. We're not telling you what's in them. Implicitly, I'd see your point. I don't agree because I feel like I did get something. I'm getting an original story. I'm getting an extra dungeon. I'm getting these additional challenges, which, to be fair, I don't know what those are. I don't know what new hard mode is. I also think that the first pack is a lot lighter than the second pack. I think the second pack is going to be the one everyone's going to be talking about.
I'm not saying it's not necessarily enough details, but it is vague. And I agree. People's money is super important. Mm-hmm. Some people only can buy one thing a year.
I agree.
I just don't like... it's pretty tough. Like, if you love Zelda, what if that's your one game, Switch, it's your one thing, and now you're like, crap, I'm just going to spend the 20, but that might be really hard for you to do.
I think that's fair.
I think that's a tough line to walk.
I think what eases it a bit is the track record of the company making it. Like, that's what
I think that's it.
This is like, they're more of a Gracie, less of a Crazy Red, if you know what I'm talking about.
Well, you're on the hook, Nintendo.
Like, I don't want to say put blind faith into publishers, but Nintendo and Zelda, historically, really good track record. And also, Zelda DLC, which we saw in Hyrule Warriors, was really well done, and I felt provided a great value to extend the length of that game.
The only time we saw Nintendo charge what I consider a little extra was with Smash Brothers and some of those characters, there was a lot bundled in. There was a little more subtle. First of all, you had not just a character IP. Like, for example, if you bought Ryu, you're not just getting Ryu, you're getting a stage dedicated Ryu, you're getting special music added to that as well.
And you guys are playing Fire Emblem now, right, on mobile? Do you feel like you're getting a good value in terms of the DLC in that game? I mean, because you're buying things, that's a lot more sort of like...
You mean Fates, or do you mean the mobile game?
Actually,
mobile
game. That is a... that's a great thing to bring up, because I've totally bought some stuff on like microtransaction stuff.
You bought Fire Emblem.
Do you feel like you're getting your money's worth? Or
no, but I'm still going to do it. I was going to point out that I, full disclosure, am the type of person, like, I would buy like a solid gold Link tunic for whatever, $15. Like, don't do that, Nintendo. But I'm the stupid person who will
stop
do that.
Stop it. You're ruining it for all of us.
Well, cups of coffee in San Francisco cost like $6.50. So you know what I mean?
Stop it. You're ruining it for all of
us. But my point is, yes, full disclosure, there are people out there, I think, that are fine doing it. I think that's fine. But on the other side, again, there's people who they really need to make that decision. I just feel like they could have provided more in the rollout plan.
I agree.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree.
So you know what you're getting.
I feel like with this game, the decision is easily made in that, like Brian said, you know the developer's pedigree. You go back and you're like, you played Link Between Worlds, and when it ended, were you sad or relieved? Mm-hmm. Do you want to keep that game? If you want to keep that game, you probably want more of that game.
Yeah.
And so that governs my decision. I actually did not pre-buy The Witcher DLC. Mm-hmm. I didn't buy it in advance or anything or decide on buying it. It was like, once I knew more about it, I wanted it. The instant reward here makes it a little bit more complicated, but...
Well, what I wanted to end on, though, is that, just wait. If you're sitting at home going, they haven't said enough, don't buy it. Yeah. Like, I don't think those three treasure chests are going to save your life or change your life.
Well, there's probably
they might improve your hearts.
That's what I'm saying.
But they
could save your life.
But they probably
I'm sure you have plenty and they're not doing much.
But
right
I think
now.
The treasure chest will not contain something that you can't get any other way.
Right.
Well,
right?
Except
it's,
for that
not, okay. it's not if, an exclusive item except for a t-shirt.
Okay. Well, that's a good point, actually.
Yeah. All right, Fran, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
That wraps our segment. And when we come back, we're going to have Bill Trinan here. Don't go away. Listen. All right, so we have a surprise for you. Joining us for this segment to talk about Zelda, Breath of the Wild, and 1-2 Switch, we have Bill Trinan.
Yay!
Hey, Bill.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Where'd you come from?
You just snapped your fingers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
1-2. Here I am.
Yeah.
Welcome.
All right. So as much as we want to grill you on so much about Nintendo Switch, you came prepared.
I tried.
Your PR people are waiting in the wings with weapons that could possibly take us out the minute we utter something we're not supposed to. So apologies to the audience up front if we're not asking the question you want us to. Mm-hmm. We've been kind of sworn not to.
That's right.
But we can still talk a lot about Zelda and about 1-2 Switch because you've got these two products that are for two very different audiences, right? Zelda being a very hardcore game, 1-2 Switch being more of a casual game. Talk about these two products and just how they represent what Switch is.
Well, obviously, I mean, I don't think I need to talk to you guys about Zelda because, I mean,
Give it to us now.
Your history with Zelda goes back a very long time.
Never heard of it.
That's the name of the elf boy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, Breath of the Wild, I think, is a game, obviously, that people have been waiting for a very long time. It's the first time outside of, you know, the Twilight Princess launch that we've actually had a Zelda game at the launch of a hardware system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being the game that it is and being a big shift for the franchise. I think there's going to be a lot of people interested in playing it, probably interested in buying a Switch to try it out. I think there's probably even some people who are thinking, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to buy a Switch yet. I'm going to get the Wii U version and then I'll buy a Switch when I see that there's more games coming out. And, certainly that's their choice, but I guarantee you that the very first moment that you are walking away from your house to go somewhere on an extended trip and you're leaving your Wii U at home, you're instantly going to be like, oh my God, why did I not buy the Switch version?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I speak from experience because we've had pre-production Switch hardware at the office for a while. And it's like every time I've had to go on a business trip, I can't bring it with me because it can't leave the office because it's all pre-production hardware.
I was going to ask about that.
Right. Yeah. And so it's, you know,
not even, even in the hotel room in the safety of no one's eyes? Like,
no, we've got strict hardware and software security protocols, which means I can't even bring it home at night.
80% of like the stories that leak in the video game industry is a guy on an airplane with a laptop or a tablet open. I can't even imagine bringing a
Switch there. Or leaving a device at a bar. Yeah.
You could ask for a bunch of blankets and just come out. Yeah.
I know, huddle with the flashlight, you know, like we used to do.
That would go over well. obviously we're super excited for Breath of the Wild and we've all been waiting for it for a while. When you look at the game, you know, when you first saw the game, was there kind of a sense of trepidation that you see this open world, you see Link just kind of able to mess around with these setups, like in a true kind of open world fashion. Was there some trepidation where you went, ooh, what are the diehard Zelda fans who like want their hookshot to open this dungeon and then complete it and beat the boss with a hookshot, kind of like that loyalist? Were you worried about their reaction to it?
No, just because, I mean, to a certain degree, you know, and we've talked about it, it really does go back to the very original game, right? I mean, that first game, the game just starts and you're just there and you don't have anything. And you're like, okay, what do I do? Where do I go? And you just start wandering. And so it really does kind of bring that feeling back. So anybody, you know, like you or me who's old, can really kind of relive.
Not old.
I feel great. We didn't get included on that. Man.
I had
Zelda and NES at launch. Man,
don't bring it up. They're going to notice.
He included himself. So.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, really, it really harkens back to that. And really, I think, brings back the sense of exploration and discovery that game really pioneered. Mm-hmm. Does it in a way, I mean, obviously having played on pre-production, we're getting, you know, we'd get updated builds and things like that. And so you play the beginning of the game kind of over and over again. And it's like every time it's, you know, you say, okay, well, this time I'm actually going to head off in this direction. And then you get a new build later and you say, okay, well, I went that direction last time. Now I'm going to go this direction and see what happens when I go this way first. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of invites this, you know, sense of wonder and just freedom of exploration. It's funny because I've played hours and hours and hours of the game. I haven't finished.
Humble brag.
I haven't finished. Because I'm just, I'm like, oh, wait, should I go do this part of the story? Or no, there's, look at that pretty mountain.
Right.
I'm going to go climb that mountain.
See what's there.
Which I think, like,
what's
up there.
Link Between Worlds kind of scratched that itch for me a little bit, right? And sort of being one of the first Zelda games to kind of bring back that free form. I can just walk out and start somewhere. But even that, you know, it's top down and it's sort of, you don't have that, like, I can see that mountain 100 miles away. I can walk to it. Whereas Skyward Sword felt a little more sort of segmented area by area.
Yeah.
So this is definitely more Link Between Worlds than it is Skyward Sword,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it certainly draws on some of the shifts that they introduced there. I kind of look at it as it's a little bit like Wind Waker if there was a continent, you know, and just in terms of there's so many directions to go in. There's so much to look for. There's so much to find. Of course, in Wind Waker, you spend a lot of that time on the ocean traveling from island to island. And now it's like that, all that area is filled in.
Right.
And, you know, it's just this massive land and there's stuff to do in between the areas that you're actually trying to get to.
So, but to Per's point, it is interesting to see Nintendo step away from the traditional items that you're used to. I mean, yeah, the bombs are roughly, you can say that works the same, but you have things like the stasis rune. You have things that just sort of work in very, very different ways. I think that takes a lot of confidence to just say, all right, folks know these mechanics already. Now let's do Magnesis and just have you picking up metal objects and flailing them around to sort of play.
And to be honest, it's funny because, you know, as a longtime Zelda fan, right, you have something like that stasis room, which you haven't really seen in a game before, and you kind of fall into, oh, okay, I've got my bombs and I'm going to use those, and I'm, you know, I've got my sword or I've got my weapon. And at times you forget about these other things that you have at your disposal. And stasis in particular is one where there's actually a lot of fun to be had from experimenting with that and what it does and how you can use it.
Yeah.
You want to share some of that?
No.
But it didn't dawn upon me until I actually played the game at E3 and kind of was able to mess around with it that I was like, oh, yeah, I guess the Zelda series never had the kind of realistic physics model, right? Like back, one of my favorite games on the N64 back in the days was Rocket Robot on Wheels, right? And that was all about objects in the world actually having real physics. And so there was an inertia when you hit something, it would roll, and I was like, oh yeah, I guess the Zelda games, it was, you could pick up all these objects and interact, but, you know, they didn't cause chain reactions in the same way that this game does, where I mean, burning fire produces an updraft, or you know, a rock rolls into another rock and that rock is affected by that, so
there's a boulder on a cliff and you push the boulder over the cliff and it rolls down one way, and then you come back later and there's a boulder on the same cliff and you push it down and it rolls a different way.
Yeah.
Whereas
the question is, who keeps pushing that boulder back up there? And what is wrong with that?
Yeah, well, it's the Pikmin, you know.
It's the Pikmin. Yeah, so I think that's like a really interesting approach to sort of interactivity on the fly, but it's what's really fascinating to me is sort of the order in which people will do things. Because I feel like this is one of those games, and obviously this is IGN. We have an office full of hardcore gamers who are all going to be playing this game. Coming in and talking to people about this game, I feel like it's going to be almost incredibly dangerous to avoid spoilers constantly, because if somebody goes left and I go right, and I spent 4 hours playing the game and they did too, we're going to come in with completely different experiences rather than, say, playing, you know, you're pretty much your standard issue third person action game these days is, oh, you got through the first level, you got through the second level. So I guess what I'm confused about is like how difficult it would be to sort of balance a system like that where you're going to head in one direction and pretty much not be able to get into a certain area. Like, does that mean that you're playing completely different ways than other people?
I mean, certainly you are to a certain extent, because you can play things in whatever order you want. You will run into, you know, similar to the first Zelda game, you'll run into areas where you get in there and the enemies are just going to, you know, knock your socks off.
Right.
Right. And so from that perspective, there will be parts of the world where you try to go in there at the very beginning, and you're going to get wrecked. The other thing that I've noticed, which is I find to be really interesting in just how they've designed the world, is that there's times where sort of the geography kind of it pushes you in ways. And you know, for example, like I'll there'll be like a big mountain and I'll see, you know, something on the map on the other side that I want to get to. And then it's like trying to find your path around this mountain and all this. And the first time I noticed it, it really felt, you know, it was like I was reading The Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. as they're trying to get to, you know, to Rivendell. As they're being chased by the Black Riders and they're sort of like getting kind of pushed by the terrain and, mm-hmm. you know, or when they're going up into the Caradhras Pass in the Misty Mountains. And it's like, there's places that you want to go to and you know you can get to, and yet it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of this struggle yeah. to it that's yeah. that, and then you think you're going one way and you find that you've been kind of following this mountain down and it puts yeah. you out yeah. somewhere that you weren't expecting.
When
and
it's all about prep, right?
Yeah, yeah. there's something like, to find yeah. there that maybe you didn't anticipate. Whereas so it's really
you,
interesting.
When you look at something like Leap Between Worlds, the signage was very overt, like quite mm-hmm. literally signage of like, you need a hammer to get through this. And it sounds like this is going to be a little more subtle. Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of like going swimming in Ocarina for the first time and seeing a rupee and doing a dive for it and not being able to reach and then going, yeah. like, what do I need to push
well, it? Well, yeah. like it felt like a smart system to just get people accustomed to, hey, you're going to need this tool for this dungeon. But then later on, you guys completely pulled back on that. Like if you mm-hmm. once you get to Dark World, that's not a thing. And you can just pick any direction you want to go, mm-hmm. which was really interesting. It feels like, though, with this game, the training wheels come off much sooner.
I mean, right. They're, it's as soon as you walk out of that first
yeah.
cave. You
know? Yeah, yeah. yeah. yeah.
I love the with the free climbing and the meter, the grip meter and all that, the game very clearly communicates, like, what you can and can't do right now, and mm-hmm. it kind of raises hopes for what you can do later. Like
mm-hmm. yeah.
I play a lot of games like The Witcher, for example, where sometimes I'm walking up a mountain and I'm like, I don't think I'm supposed to be here. You're like kind of walking and shimmying sideways mm-hmm. and the game yeah. doesn't clearly tell yeah. you whether you can or should do that, or if yeah. you're going to get stuck in something. But with this game, it's I feel like the on-screen stuff is very, very clear that
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
It know? Also feels like you're always making a discovery of some kind, even if yeah. it's not something grand. It's still something you go, oh, look at this vista, or oh, yeah. look at this mm-hmm. sort of bug I've never seen before.
Have you,
exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious, have you run into anything where you kind of, you're exploring and you find something and to this point you're not sure what it is or what it does? Like when oh, I yeah. first played Ocarina of Time, I'd be like, you fall into a hole and there's a cow there. And you're like, what do you do with a cow? And then of course you learn what to do with it later through music, but anything yeah. like that?
You play 1-2 switch.
Yeah. Nice job. Nice job. Good work.
But do you have an example of something?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are times where you're sort of hiking up these hills. You could probably gauge from the way I describe the game is that the game has roads and there's paths and there's actual benefits to following the paths. And, you know, I talk about how the terrain kind of pushes you, but if you get on the path and kind of go the roundabout way, you can get around the terrain and try yeah. to get mm-hmm. to where you're going to. Whereas I'm the type that's just like, roads? Yeah. We don't need any roads. And so, you know, I'll be up, you know, you'll be kind of up hiking in the mountains and you'll see, you know, there's places where you'll see like these conspicuous flowers. And the first time you see it, you're thinking, well, what's that for? You know, mm-hmm. Maybe there's a purpose behind that. Well, I'm off heading in this direction to go to this mm-hmm. place, so I'll put a little stamp on my map and come back and figure it out later. Yeah. And it's not just flowers. There's sort of other things that you'll find kind of scattered about that do that.
Yeah, you've shown villagers. You've shown like that you'll sort of wander into these combat scenarios. I mean, talk a little bit about that and maybe some of the experiences and things that unfolded. As loosely or specifically as you'd like, of course.
Yeah, well,
specifically is always
preferred. I know, but which is interesting because one of the things specifically that we've done is that if I was to ask you what's the story of the game, right. what's the flow of the game. Would you guys?
We kind of don't know,
right?
I have a guess, but I'm not going to waste time on the show to tell you. I'm going to wait until we're off mic.
We haven't even really seen like a ton of like the temples, really. I mean, just right. some mm. stuff here and there, scratching the surface.
Yeah, and that's, I think, really, it's intentional. You know, Mr. Fujibayashi in particular was he really wanted to, he didn't want to kind of draw a straight line for people in terms of the story and the flow mm. and things mm-hmm. like that, and so we want people to not only explore and discover the world, but really explore and discover the story as well.
So should we like kind of back off social media for those first few days? Cause there's always that guy.
I mean, there probably is going to be that. It's not going to be me, but yeah. There's going to be that guy,
sure, yeah.
you know? So, but yeah, I mean, you know, there are towns, there are villages. And even as you're out kind of exploring the world, if you stick to the roads, you will encounter, you know, people traveling along the roads as well, and there's a lot to learn from them. You know, some of them, you know, you may be able to get items from and things like that. But there's a lot going on in the world.
So you guys probably had a document at Nintendo with very strict rules. Do not show any items past this one or any.
Very buttoned up.
Were you worried after E3 that you showed too much?
There was concern, but even with E3, obviously, you know, we didn't show people really other than you saw the old man.
Yeah.
And we didn't show towns and we didn't go into story.
We didn't show Zelda either.
All we really showed at E3 was what Link can do. And we showed it in a very small section of the world. Mm-hmm. And so what it did, it framed for people kind of what the gameplay is and how it's different. But it still left this whole world of discovery out there forever.
Yeah. So I think before, even with that small chunk, Jose was coming back. He kept going to your booth every 20 minutes. he came back with entire sections of stuff I didn't see anybody else in the press was getting. And I was like, how much is in this demo?
The footage, right? He showed footage. I'm like, wait, there's snow?
Yeah.
How did you find that?
He was like shooting fireballs. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah. He lived in that booth, to be fair. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you pay me for. One thing I do want to ask before we, it's pretty good. One thing I do want to ask before we move over to 1-2 Switch, because I do want to hear some of the wacky stories around those minigames specifically, because some of them are hilarious. You guys announced the season pass, called the expansion pass. You outlined some of the content in broad terms, and the reaction to it has been mixed somewhat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just curious to hear, you know, your response to that reaction. Like, sort of, how did you feel, and what do you think Nintendo needs to do moving forward with this?
Well, you know, it was tough because we actually we had a lot of debate in terms of do we announce it, how do we announce it. I think one of the things that's unique about the way Nintendo develops games is when we're working on a game, you know, and certainly. Just knowing the history of Nintendo games, you guys know that it's essentially, we use every last minute to make the game as good as we possibly can.
Right.
And really what that means is that, you know, the dev team was working on the main game, finished the main game, and then as they're starting to get to the very end and wrap it up, really they said, you know, we've made this massive world of Hyrule. We've spent a long time building it. It would be a waste to just make one game and have that be it. We want people to be able to enjoy exploring this world. And so then they started thinking about, well, if we were going to do DLC, what would we do? How would we do it? And you can see that in the fact that it's not, the DLC is not launching the day after the game or a week after. You know, it's coming out several months later in the form of the first pack and then several months after that in the form of the second pack. And that's because the content's in development, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think from my perspective, you know, obviously if we were able to share more detail, that would have been easier. But I think if you look to the example of something like a Mario Kart type of a DLC approach, really what the goal is, you know, let's give people the option to purchase it when they're there at the store buying the game and give them something to look forward to and kind of, you know, let them know that there's more to come in this world. And if you're a Zelda fan who's buying Nintendo Switch at launch, and really you're buying it for Zelda, I mean, how happy are you to know that, hey, that I'm going to be able to play more Zelda in this world later this year.
It's like one of my favorite things about the original Zelda, which this game is, you know, obviously echoing in many ways, is that it had a second quest. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of something we've been buzzing about on this show here for a couple months now. I'm always like, I really hope this has something like that where you can complete it and go back. So to me, that's really awesome. The Switch shirt on Link is just an extra, like, wait, what? I can't wait to see
well,
that.
Well, it's the old horse armor, you know, thing again, yeah. where it's yeah. like, I think when people focus on that one element, it becomes kind of like, why am I paying for this thing?
Yeah.
But I also understand as a business, right, Nintendo wants to signal ahead of time saying, when you finish this game, don't trade it in, don't sell it, don't give it to your friend, don't lose it. There's going to be more content. And like, I'm a hoarder. I keep all those games. But I think, you know, for younger gamers, they do think about a story-driven game as being finite, and then they trade it away or they stop.
And I feel like we've sort of wished on this show that there would be more with this world more use put to this world. Because it would be sad for it to be, I feel, a one and done, and then you guys just step away and move on to the next thing. So I'm really eager to hear about more when that time is right, and you guys can, you know, say more to that. So then transitioning, I do want to talk about 1-2 Switch.
I do, too.
I've heard. Hang on, I'm going to check if okay, I'm not in anyone's sights yet.
Sniper
bullet, yeah, right there. So tell me a bit about working on 1-2 Switch and what that experience has been like. I mean, we've seen Nintendo launch software built in tandem with the hardware before. I feel like, for example, you've been there too with like Wii Sports.
Yeah,
and Wii. Can you sort of draw comparisons or even differences between these two very, very specific games?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things about 1-2 Switch that I find really fun and interesting, because we've had a lot of opportunity to show it at a few different events now. We actually had two separate events in New York earlier. Oh, I don't know what day we're on right now, but maybe earlier this week. Yeah. And the thing about 1-2 Switch that I think to me is most interesting is the simplicity of the individual games. It means that anybody can sit down, or, you know, in some cases stand up and start playing, and it's fairly easy to grasp what the goal is right away. And it makes it the simplicity of it means that it's very easy for people who don't even know each other to sit down and start playing together. And one of the ways that Mr. Takahashi and Mr. Koizumi describe it is they kind of describe, you know, Nintendo Switch, the hardware system, and 1-2 Switch, the game, really as being tools for entertainment. You know, we often say Nintendo, we're not a video game company, we're an entertainment company, and the hardware is the tools for entertainment that we provide. I actually look at 1-2 Switch along those lines as really, it's sort of like, you know, if you're throwing a party, you're going to go out to the party store and you're going to buy all your party stuff. This is sort of like one of the things that you would buy at a party store if it was sold at party stores, that you would then, you know, bring to your party to kind of be the icebreaker and get people mingling and having fun together. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what we've seen happening. We had an event last week in New York that was media-based, with a bunch of media that had never met each other before, and we instantly had them up on stage milking cows and
runway
doing
models.
Quick draw, yeah, runway yeah. models, you know, and it's like people, and I mean, what other way are people going to get together and start doing this crazy stuff? Yeah. It wouldn't happen if
it's
1-2
a lot
Switch
less intimidating than a karaoke. I will say that.
Guitar Hero, you know, at one point seemed like the most daunting thing ever, and then it was at every party, right? Yeah. Like just took over because people looked at the instrument and said, "Guitar, I get what I'm supposed to do."
Yeah.
And then they learn it, and it becomes natural.
And it grew into Rock Band, and it went even further.
And Wii Sports certainly was that way too, right? Like when somebody who doesn't play games looks at a controller, it may be confusing, but you see somebody go like this and you're like, oh yeah, tennis, or like this and it's bowling. I'm curious to see if 1-2 Switch has that same impact where people kind of look at it and go like, do I really want to do that? And then they try it and they're hooked and they'll come back for more.
Yeah,
that's really what I love about it, that I think separates it from Guitar Hero and Wii Sports, is that it's so triumphantly weird.
Yes.
Like,
why was it not WarioWare, by the way?
I was thinking that. Like, so this feels like there's like a like Uncle Wario's in the background being like, yeah, I made this happen just to go take care of it. Like, this feels like his brand. This is very on brand for him. That's what I'm very excited about. And there's how many different games in it are?
I think it's like, 28.
So every time I see it, like, something else gets revealed. We saw the sandwich thing. We saw the milking thing. Mm-hmm. The baby holding thing is just one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen from you guys. And you guys have been making bizarre stuff for decades.
That is the weirdest thing.
You're holding the tablet and you're rocking it to sleep, and it's like its eyes closed and it stops crying, and then you put it down and walk away. And I was like, that is terrifying.
The baby face on the screen gets me.
Yeah.
I'm really creeped out by this thing.
You also have stuff like wacky stuff to take ideas that you already played, like Quick Draw, but now it's Fake Draw. And it's like, okay, ready, steady, five. Mm-hmm. And it's not fire. And you're like, wait, whoever shoots first just lost.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah, I appreciate the amount of games also that sort of move you away from the television. I think it's something we see kids nowadays are just holding two phones and a tablet at the same time while watching a TV show. And obviously you're still going to be connected to a video game system doing this, but the idea of like putting down the Switch and then walking from each side with the Joy-Cons and looking at each other for a little bit and pretending you're shooting guns at each other is really cool and admirable. I kind of like that.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm a parent, you're a parent, you know, it's the thing that I really love about it is, you know, I see my kids spending so much time you know, just staring at a screen on their own. Like we even, you know, we'll have, you know, kids over playing Splatoon and like, you know, there's one kid playing Splatoon and three kids playing three different games on 3DSs.
Right.
You know, and then the idea that we can have this system, we each got our controller, we're playing together, we can do this wherever we want to, you know, and in some cases we're not even looking at the screen. To me as a parent is, I'm like, that gets me excited because my instant vision is, you know, my kids are having fun together.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think it will be as universal as Wii Sports, or do you think there's going to be a divide where, you know, like the core gamer, the folks who go out and buy The Legend of Zelda, they will look at one to Switch and say, oh, that's not for me. That's closer to a board game night or something. Or do you think it has that Wii Sports factor where everybody can play it?
Well, the funny thing is you say that, but I'm like, I'd actually argue that there's probably a lot of Zelda players that actually play board games.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Right? Yeah, sure. That's true.
You know, it is sort of, it does have that kind of board game night feel. It, you know, it feels a bit like, it's kind of funny because there's elements of it that sort of feel like improv night at the same time.
Yeah. Right?
And so it's sort of your opportunity to just kind of cut loose and have fun, and who doesn't like to cut loose and have fun?
Yeah, I'm just reacting, you know, when you look at comments from on YouTube and on our website, like there's definitely this contingent of gamers who say, that's not what I wanted. What is that, right? Like, they're confused about it, or they're hostile. Some are hostile to that concept. They're very excited for Zelda, but they kind of look at this game and they can't quite grasp why they would want it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the certain part of video games is just like letting go of that tough guy persona. I say as a scruffy man in a leather jacket, but like I bring my 3DS everywhere.
I'm kind of scared of you sitting here.
Well, I also see it as something that is just such a part of Nintendo and Nintendo's mm-hmm. culture. I mean, I feel like you kind of, it represents the company so well, especially like I feel this platform in the sense that you have your hardcore games, mm-hmm. you have your not hardcore games, you have stuff in between those, you have the wacky ideas like Splatoon. And I just think that really helps this out versus I feel like maybe the image of some of your competitors is more the, okay, this is mature audience gaming. This is that kind of style. And I think there's room for that. I think that's important.
You know, certainly. I mean, you know, I like video games. I like movies. I like sports. Mm-hmm. I'm not big into knitting, but I'm not really mad that knitting exists.
You know? It's like, you should be mad. You know how many people are wasting knives?
I mean, but there's a lot of people that like knitting.
Yeah. No, it's true. Right.
I'm amazed Miyamoto hasn't done like Nintendo yet.
Oh, well, remember there was the add-on.
There was the sewing machine.
The sewing machine. Yeah.
Steve Lin might have it. We need to get in touch with him. It's out there. So what are some of the wackier games in the set, the ones that stand out to you that were like, oh, God, I can't believe this is
a thing. For me, it was less about the wackier, and really it was more the first time I played it. It was about the HD Rumble. And the safe cracking game. The very first time I played it was where, you know, you sit down and you're looking. You start by looking at the screen, and there's a safe in front of you, and you start turning it and turning it, and you're like, I could look at this all day, and it's not going to do a dang thing for me.
Yeah.
And then you're like closing your eyes, and you're feeling all those individual tiny little clicks inside the controller as you're turning the dial, trying to figure out where's the one spot where the click is different that's going to give me the hint that this is. I hold it here to unlock that section and then start going and searching for the next one.
Right.
And it was just that the sensation of, you know, and the ball count game is kind of similar, but that sensation that you have in your hand is something that you've never gotten from a controller before in a video game. Hmm. You know, and I don't know if you guys have played the ball count game.
I did,
I mean, literally the first time you play it, you're like, Are there actually balls in a Joy-Con?
Really, does it feel that accurate? I mean, I played the system, but I didn't play one to Switch, so I didn't have that HD Rumble experience yet. But you would say it does feel that unique from a standard Rumble?
Yes. Like, I mean, different? When we first heard about HD Rumble, we were like, okay, well, that sounds cool. Yeah. You know, we'll need to figure out what it is. And then we tried it, and I was just like, oh, my God. Like, how is it the Pikmin again? Yeah. And I was like, how did you do that?
No, you really do feel the individual clicks on it. And, like, the first reflex I felt was to shut my eyes.
Yeah.
And, like, not even look at the screen anymore and just go, okay, wait. Okay, so there goes one. All right. And then you're, like, feeling around in a dimension. And it sounds weird. So I'm telling you, like, I felt like I was a crazy person describing it to people. In fact, we tried describing describing it on this show turned into a bunch of immature kids at the moment. Sorry, CJ, if you're listening, why did you do that? Or actually, it was Zach's fault. But it was still something. What were other ways that you were introduced to HD Rumble, just out of curiosity? Was it mostly through 1-2 Switch?
Or, oh, well, yeah. Like, did you play with some other stuff? Use it in the new Metroid game, or do they...
The new what game?
I had to get one mention in. We tried.
I was this close, too.
Yeah. This close.
But only in the third level.
Yeah. That was the appropriate answer.
That's not trick journalism.
Yeah, that's right.
And it has never worked.
Yeah. Never worked once.
I know. But yeah, I mean, primarily, you know, it was 1-2 Switch, and obviously, you know, being launched, there's more games down the road, and I think we'll start to see more uses of the HD Rumble, and I've... You know, there's enough ideas floating around my head where I'm just like, I can't wait to see what they actually implement, because there's a lot that you could do with it.
Now,
another good one in 1-2 Switch that takes mm-hmm. advantage of it, and maybe you don't want to hear this, but it is milking.
Oh, the milking?
Yes.
Yeah. It's weird how you do that.
He's a pro. Grew up on a farm. Which, Billy Trinan.
You know, like, I was watching all the GIFs that came out of that. And people who put certain website logos in the corner. And I was like, there's no way they didn't know this was going to happen. It's not like you guys were like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Like, you guys kind of walked right into it. Like, you're owning how weird that is. Well, it's great. Yeah.
Whoever thought somebody would make a video game about milking a cow?
Yeah.
I mean, most of us milk cows every day without thinking about
it. But then you guys took it to the next step, and poor JC's wearing the hat, which he chose, I'm sure. But that gif is incredible, by the way. It's one of my favorites.
See, like, I expect that sort of weirdness, having played WarioWare games and cheese graters and all that stuff. But, like, I think it's actually very notable that who would ever think of making a video game where you don't look at the screen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a really weird concept for that title. So I'm really curious to try that out.
It's the idea of making eye contact and milking at the same time.
Yeah.
That's throwing me off. Just, you got to stop doing that. Please don't ever do that again.
We're totally playing it.
But speaking of which, I mean, obviously we've seen a lot of multiplayer during games in 1-2 Switch. Mm-hmm. But what about gamers that want to milk alone?
Journalism.
Well, there isn't a single player mode, but you know, certainly if you want to milk alone, you could. Yeah, you could just milk. You can get your practice on.
Right? It has a practice mode.
Yeah. But will there be like a certain set of mini games in 1-2 Switch that people can play on their own, or is this like primarily a multiplayer focused?
It really is multiplayer focused. It really is sort of the icebreaker at the party. You know,
but you could, if you want, you could put, you know, controllers on your feet,
just pretend on hands, double
you
milk
could, like, yeah, you can double milk against like your appendages.
This got weird. Yeah.
Well, only had pets.
How do you corral these two?
It's tough.
Yeah,
I say as one of the people who needs to corral.
Yeah. I've gotten a few extra gray hairs, but I mean,
The actual, we record for about 3 hours, and then he cuts it down to about 1 hour.
You cut out a lot of the things they say too. You'd be surprised. Yeah, a lot of things.
I like that you're asking that, even though you guys made the weirdest freaking game.
Don't put it on us. We're doing this.
Yeah. It's also true. This is also
we just provide the tools for your entertainment.
That's right.
Clearly,
the teats they call them.
Absolutely. I guess then, with respect to 1-2 Switch, I wonder though if, as Per was saying, because there is sort of, you know, it isn't something that's packed into the software. You guys, with the hardware, you guys made that deliberate decision. Are you trying to find more interesting ways to demo that stuff for people? Just because this has to be a hard game to communicate what it is to some extent.
Yeah, you know, it is. And it's, you know, we, in the events that we've seen, it's, what's funny is that when people play it, it's, you know, it's instant. You know, the smiles on their faces, you see kids playing together and they're having a great time. You see parents watching their kids playing and their parents are happy because the kids are having fun and because the kids are interacting with each other. We had an event where the parents then walked up and like yanked the controllers out of the kids' hands, not because they had to go home, but because the parents wanted to play themselves. We've got the sampling events that have been going on sort of up in the run-up to launch. We'll probably see some more opportunities down the road. You know, we're always going to places like PAX East and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so we'll probably keep 1-2 Switch in the rotation at some of those events, and we'll, you know, maybe we'll see opportunities in the summertime as well. So
plans to like have a demo on the eShop or whatever you guys are calling it eventually down the line?
You know, not immediately, not right now. They might think about something like that down the road, but
Yeah, I mean, demo is one thing, but it's a game where when you watch people play it, that's when it becomes interesting, right?
So, well, that's the thing is that it's a game that's, it is fun to play. It's also probably as much fun to watch other people play as it is to play yourself. It's hilarious.
The entire editorial pit was watching the 1-2 Switch reveal event in January, and we were all just clapping and cheering watching all that stuff going on. It's just one of those, it just showcases really well because it's people having fun, and that's infectious, you know?
We're going to solve office disputes this way. You know, whenever there's a disagreement, it's like, all right, draw.
Quick draw. There you go.
If I have to milk a cow to get my raise, I'm milking that cow.
I hadn't thought about that, but now that you brought it up.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure that's illegal, but we'll talk.
All right, Will. Well, thank you very much for coming to join us. This was a good surprise, a great surprise, actually. And we've got some other fun stuff in store. Not to build up too much expectation, but make sure you're watching IGN the week of Switch launch, because we've got some fun things that folks may want to come check out.
I'm excited.
With respect to, well, you know some things.
I don't know that much.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well,
and best of luck with the launch of your new console. I mean, that can't be an easy thing to do. From the outside looking in, we're just like, you know, I clicked a button on Amazon and someone will deliver it to me. But you guys had to actually put this thing out, so that's super cool.
It's that must be pretty heavy weight to get this machine out there. Like I have noticed just meeting with Nintendo over the last couple of months, like people were so giddy. Like it seemed like you guys were just bursting wanting to tell the story about the device and wanted to show it off. And you know, it's pretty late reveal, right? Before a launch. So that must have been something for you guys.
Well, I mean, it's been we're giddy. Sometimes we're giddy because we're working so hard that it's like, delirious. Where am I right now?
Delirious. Yeah,
this is crazy. What city am I in?
Remember that if you fall, let the Pikmin catch you.
That's right.
Carry on.
But no, I mean, it's true. You know, it's kind of funny because we're not a very big company globally at Nintendo. And so anytime there's a hardware launch, it's like everybody in the company is putting forth every possible effort they can to help get everything ready for it. So usually there's sort of like you launch it and there's a sigh of relief. And unfortunately, what happens is we launch it, and then it's like E3. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't even get Christmas afterwards, like most consoles.
Right,
Well, hopefully you get to take a breather after E3, and you get to sort of settle down, or it's just promotion for the fall.
Well, we'll see. There's a lot coming and a lot to do. But
there's PAX, Comic-Con.
Yep. Oh, event season. Comic-Con. That's right.
Gamescom.
Oh,
Lord. Event season.
Yeah. Yep. Space World. He's got Nintendo of Europe. He's like, that's your problem. I'm not dealing with that. This is Bill Trinan signing off. All right, so where can folks find you on the internet? You have a Twitter, yes?
I don't know.
Are you allowed to point folks to your Twitter, or do you prefer not to?
I don't have a verified Twitter, so my Twitter is just my personal.
Oh, we're fancy at this table.
$50,000 that blue check cost. Can you believe it?
No, it's not true. I don't know.
It's expensive.
It's free.
Right. Well, maybe if you find me, you find me, and then you can see pictures of spiders and read articles about science.
Okay, fair enough. If not, you can point them towards Nintendo's Twitter account for anyway.
Absolutely. If you're looking for Nintendo news, Nintendo. Actually, I don't even know our Twitter handle. It's just search for Nintendo of America.
Yeah,
there you go.
That sound you just heard may have been the PR person falling over in the chair. I hope he's all right. All right, fair enough. Well, make sure you look up Nintendo on Twitter, and if you can find Bill, you'll learn more about science. If you want to follow Brian Altano, you can find him at
Agent Bizzle.
You can find Per Schneider at
Per IGN.
And you can find myself, Jose_Otero. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rain Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.